listening to Building Bridges with Ken Nash and myself, Mimi Rosenberg, all about Medicare for All and can it provide universal access to health care? Today, more than 30 million Americans still don't have health insurance, and even more are underinsured. Even for those with insurance, costs are so high that medical bills are the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States. Incredibly, we spend significantly far more of our national GDP on this inadequate healthcare system per person than any other major country. And despite doing so, Americans have worse health outcomes and a higher infant mortality rate than countries that spend much less on healthcare.
Our experts. They'll discuss the current Medicare program and what about coverage for long-term care expenses and coverage of hearing, dental, vision, or foot care? And what's wrong with expanding Obamacare? Wouldn't that be easier than passing Medicare for All?
We'll clear up the often confusing Medicare for All debate, including its history, prospects, and terminology. Medicare for All is a rallying cry for progressives, but even when the Democratic presidential candidates claim to support it, there are shades of difference, such as the role of Medicare Advantage programs and the nuances they matter. Our experts will help unravel the differences. Some use the term Medicare for All to mean a much less drastic change to the U.S. healthcare system, such as the public option. What would offer specific groups of people, perhaps those over the age of 50, or consumers purchasing coverage on the insurance marketplace, is the opportunity to buy into Medicare coverage.
What about the plan offered by Senator Bernie Sanders, in which the government would be in charge of paying for all health care, although doctors, hospitals, and other health care providers would remain private? And what would happen to union-negotiated health care plans? So, is eliminating private insurance with a move to Medicare for All the answer? How can we build a Medicare for All plan? Is Medicare for All plan the solution for universal health care? Well, after listening to our experts, you'll be able to decide to answer all these questions for yourself.
Donald E. Moore, MD, is a primary care physician and is on the board of directors of the New York Metro chapter of Physicians for a National Health Care Plan. And my goodness, he still makes home visits. And Judy Sheridan Gonzalez is an RN, president of the New York State Nurses Association. Steffi Woodhandler is also a primary care physician, professor of public health and health policy at Hunter College, and clinical professor at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and secretary of the Physicians for a National Health Care Plan. And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
I want us to begin by perhaps each one of you at least giving us a synopsis of what the heck are we talking about when we say Medicare for All or single payer? There's a doctor in the house. Let's start with Donald Moore.
Hi. Medicare for All is single payer, one insurance for every American. Medicare for All will result in better outcomes. Outcomes means we will actually do better than we're doing now. It's going to be universal. Universal means everybody's in, nobody's out. Medicare for All, as it stands now in the Senate and in the House, is going to provide broader coverage for everyone, broader than what you would have now for Medicare. Medicare for All is going to cost less, and it's going to provide better choice. We don't need choices of multiple insurance companies. What we need is a choice of doctors. We need a choice of hospitals. We need a choice of the health care we're going to get. We don't need a choice of multiple insurance companies complicating the lives of patients, complicating the lives of doctors, and really costing us, the taxpayers, a whole lot more than it needs to cost us.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, what is Medicare for All?
Thank you for having us on the show. So the current health plans that people have are embedded in insurance corporations, who are designed to make a profit. And because of their presence in healthcare, very often we don't make clinical decisions. We don't make decisions that are necessarily in the best interest of patients. We make decisions to care for patients that are built around what the insurance approves, what the insurance pays for, and our entire electronic medical record is also built around billing, what insurance will pay for, and how we can avoid giving care or overdoing giving care. With Medicare for All, we would obliterate the presence of the insurance companies, and it would just be one single payer, just like the way Medicare exists right now. The payer would be the government, but the choice and the system would be what people choose, the same way that people choose now, except people have very little choice now. That is the myth, that Medicare for All would not provide choices. I work in an emergency room, and the majority of my patients are there because of the limitation of the choice, the long wait, what their insurance doesn't cover, and they end up coming to us in extreme situations because I would absolutely blame the current system for that, with insurance companies having the control over the way care gets delivered.
Steffi Woolhandler, what is Medicare for All or single payer?
Well, the key thing to single payer is you have to get rid of the private health insurance companies. We have these gigantic private health insurance companies. Each one enrolls millions and millions of Americans, control the health care of millions of people. And they take over $250 billion out of the health care system every year for their overhead and profit. And, of course, that money has to come from somewhere. It comes out of premiums that people pay, the taxes that people pay, that are supposed to be going for health care, but instead are being basically burned up and turned into profits by our private health insurance industry. So a key aspect of single payer has to be getting private insurance out of the driver's seat in American health care and having a public system that's publicly controlled.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, now you're the president of a local union, a nurses union in New York City. Many people say that the unions have negotiated contracts, that health insurance is in that contract, and they're going to lose health insurance coverage under a new plan, that they want to keep their old plan. What's your opinion on that?
Well, the design of the plan, the design of the congressional plans, both Pramila Jayapal and Bernie Sanders, is to actually provide superior care than what we get. People who have insurance or a quote-unquote good insurance plan very often are disappointed because certain things require approvals, pre-approvals, are not approved, are not covered. The copay is way higher than they thought. They're out of network. They thought they were in-network, but they find out they're out of network. I mean, there's always a surprise. You think you have great insurance, and then when you really need to use it, you find out that many things that you thought were covered are not covered. Our unions throughout the years have negotiated, painstakingly negotiated what they thought or many of us thought to be superior health plans. And we do have unionized workers have much better health coverage than non-unionized workers. That's true. The premiums are lower in some cases. We're really lucky and we've been able to organize. They're non-existent. But mostly you're paying something, some kind of percentage, a copay. Drug coverage is not, you know, there is something you have to pay for drug coverage. So, well, but the issue is with unions, we have, over the years, sacrificed salary and other benefits to make sure that our members do get health care, and that is a sacrifice that people are very conscious of. So if the plans that are being proposed are passed in their form, there would be superior care for everybody. If there is some sort of compromise that's worked out where the care is not what we want it to be, I think that Senator Sanders' bill would provide some protection for union members who have negotiated better benefits to make sure that they keep their benefits or improve their benefits. Our hope, of course, is that the bills as they're written will be passed in the form that they're in, and everybody will be able to enjoy the same quality of excellent care.
Dr. Donald and Dr. Steffi, I'm just wondering about Joe Biden is empathetic to expanding or improving, as he would say, Obamacare. What's the problem with that? Why don't you gravitate to that both as a kind of pragmatic solution, possibly, and also substantively?
Well, I don't think it's very pragmatic to say that we're going to continue a system that wastes $252 billion on insurance overhead. And, of course, Obamacare I had two main components. One was a Medicaid expansion, and the other was expansion on the exchanges. All of that expanded exchange coverage did go through private health insurance, and actually a fair amount of the Medicaid was put through private managed care companies as well. So a lot of money continues to be wasted on the excess overhead and profits of the insurance industry. Money continues to be wasted on having an overly complex payment system that forces doctors and hospitals to waste money on administrative costs as well. So I don't think that's pragmatic. I think the pragmatic solution is to say we need an efficient system that takes all of the money devoted to health care and spends it on health care and doesn't waste a huge percentage of it on administrative costs and billing-related work. Obviously, the other thing is that the Obamacare has left 30 million Americans with no insurance. That's a big problem. And finally, Obamacare has left lots of Americans with completely inadequate coverage, really under insurance, where they have health insurance, but they can't afford to use it because of high copayments and deductibles. So, you know, even just speaking pragmatic, economic pragmatism, let's say, you're going to have a much easier time getting to real universal coverage through a simple single-payer system than through the complicated private insurance-dominated Obamacare system.
Dr. Donald, can't we just put the splint on, as Joe Biden wants to do, on Obamacare and enhance it a bit? Fix
Absolutely.
That broken leg.
Absolutely not. Obamacare was an inadequate attempt to fix a broken healthcare delivery system. It was inadequate because the biggest problem was it left in place. All these insurance companies that Steffi has pointed out have been robbing us for all these years. It didn't fix the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem is, one, we have too many insurance companies complicating our lives. Obamacare basically took taxpayers' money, your money and my money, gave it to private insurance companies and said to them, provide health care at this really high cost that you're already doing. So we're taking taxpayers' money, we're giving it to private insurance companies, and we're saying, do what you've been doing all along. Private for-profit insurance companies, their objective is profit. It's not taking care of people. Where does that idea come from that it costs more through the private companies? Well, when I give a dollar to the government and say, give me Medicare, Medicare is going to take 2 cents for its administrative costs, and it's going to take 98 cents and pay for my health care. When I take a dollar and give it to a private insurance company, a United Healthcare, an Aetna, one of those private companies, they're going to take 20 cents and keep for themselves, part for profit and part for administrative costs, and they're going to spend 80 cents. On my health care. Now, you can do the math. Who would you want to give your dollar to for your health care? Medicare has been doing it for a long time and for a lot less. What we did with Obamacare is we gave the dollar to the private health insurance companies, and they continued doing what they were doing. In addition to not only giving us a small amount of care for that dollar, what they ended up doing is eventually disenrolling people, as they have done. When we got to Obamacare, 50 million Americans were uninsured. Obamacare insured about 30 million of that 50 million. So we went down to 20 million people without health insurance. Now we have 30 million people 10 years later without health insurance. So uninsurance is growing, but not just uninsurance, but underinsurance. We're still going bankrupt from our health care. And I'm not just saying this as someone that's disinterested, someone from the outside. I practice medicine every day. I see patients every day. What we want is a government that's going to do the best for us and provide us with an affordable health insurance.
Steffi, I have a question for you. We're talking about Medicare for All, and we have Medicare right now, and we have these Medicare Advantage plans. Does that have a role in the new system, Medicare for All?
No. And let me explain about Medicare Advantage. starting several decades ago, private insurance companies started approaching Medicare and saying, you know, let us have some of the action. Let us subcontract with Medicare. We'll get the taxpayers to pay us a premium, and then we'll give them a private managed care plan. This has been going on for decades, but it has really accelerated under the Trump administration. Currently, about one-third of all people enrolled in Medicare are having the biggest part of their premium paid by the taxpayer, and that's a good thing. But the actual management of their care, the actual insurance, is coming through a private Medicare Advantage plan. And the Medicare Advantage plans raise costs to Medicare. They raise costs to the taxpayers by somewhere between $1,700 and $2,000 a year. And then they throw a few hundred dollars back at the enrollee as some extra benefits. For instance, reading glasses, slightly lower copayments when you go to the doctor. And, of course, the enrollees really welcome those extra benefits like reading glasses and a few dollars less in their copayments. But most of the extra money that the taxpayers are paying to the Medicare Advantage plans stays with the Medicare Advantage plans. Turns out that the insurance overhead on the Medicare Advantage plans is actually a bit higher than the insurance overhead on other private insurance plans. The overhead on Medicare Advantage is about 14%, 2 percentage points higher than the 12% overhead that you see in the rest of the private health insurance industry. By saying we're going to include Medicare Advantage, we're talking about throwing away at least 12% of all of the taxpayer spending just for their overhead. It'd be bad enough if it was just the private insurance overhead that Medicare Advantage would push up. But in fact, if you let Medicare Advantage private plans stay in there, you're going to continue to push lots of billing-related complexity onto doctors and hospitals, so you're also going to have very high overhead costs in your doctors and offices and hospitals. Administrative costs that could really be shrunken down if you had one payer paying all the bills. Medicare Advantage is actually a very bad idea. It's a very wasteful idea, and Medicare Advantage does feel a little different to people from private insurance because with Medicare Advantage, the taxpayers are paying a big chunk of your premium, not all of it, but a very big chunk of your premium is being paid by the taxpayer. So, you know, getting Medicare Advantage can feel like a good thing at some level because someone's helping you out so much with the premiums. But for the system as a whole, it's a much more expensive way to provide medical care than just putting everybody in a single-payer program with no private health insurers involved.
So, Nurse Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, shouldn't we be fighting for really socialized medicine? What are we girding around the issue for? And some people might think that this is socialized medicine. Your thoughts on that?
It's not socialized medicine. It's a single insurer. The government is the insurance agent. A national health system such as exists in England, for example, the United Kingdom, would be closer to that, where the government also salaries the physicians and the providers and so forth. And there are many people who would argue that that would be a superior system. But right now, you know, we're just trying to educate people about the presence of these for-profit insurance companies that are, you know, robbing the public blind and also provide, you know, are a presence for the provision of inferior care. Even with Medicare, people who are on Medicare still have to pay 20% of the cost of Medicare if they don't have an additional insurance, if they have just plain Medicare, so the copay. When they see when they do have outpatient care, doesn't cover dental, doesn't cover eyes, and it's ironic because just when your eyes are going, your teeth are falling out. You don't get coverage for that when you reach 65. So no, it's not socialized medicine, but the plans that are being proposed are definitely a stepping stone toward being able to have providers and caregivers and patients and communities together make the best healthcare decisions. These decisions are now currently made on what generates profits for insurance companies and other organizations that also are able to squeeze profits out of the system.
What about organizations like the Veterans Administration? Isn't that essentially how that functions, to provide health care for our veterans? So Dr. Moore?
Yes, but,
Judy, why don't you finish up on that, and then Dr. Moore?
You have to fund. I used to do my clinical experiences in the VA, and it was excellent care, except that it's grossly underfunded and understaffed, as many of our public systems are. We have a public system in New York City, public health system in New York City, grossly underfunded, understaffed, kind of like how charter schools develop. You defund all the public schools. You say, oh, we need something else, and all your money goes to these private charters. Adequate funding could make the system public. There's no basis for profit in healthcare. To have profit in healthcare means somebody gets harmed, and the people who get harmed are the caregivers and particularly the patients.
What we're talking about is not socialized medicine. We're talking about a single-payer health insurance. Socialized medicine is a term that was created to scare Americans from a universal single-payer health care delivery system. This was a system, as you know, back in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, when the idea of insuring all Americans, when many other European countries and developed countries were insuring their entire population, when it came up in America, the American Medical Association and the Lex Progressive people said, we can scare people by using this socialism word. So the word socialized medicine was created. Now, from my understanding, when we use the term socialized medicine, we're talking about a system where the government owns facilities. It's a hospital. The government employs the physician. When we're talking about single payer, we have never talked about the government employing the physicians or the government owning the facilities. Socialized medicine may exist, maybe in Cuba, maybe in Great Britain, but it does not exist in Canada. It does not exist in most countries with universal or single payer insurance. So socialized medicine is not the discussion here.
And Steffi Wollhandler, what about drug costs, prescription drug costs? They're an amazing problem right now. What would this do for that?
All nations with national health insurance system negotiate drug prices with pharma. And the single payer, the national health insurance system, has a lot of negotiating muscle to force pharma to push down their prices. If you go to Europe or to Canada, they'll have the exact same drugs that we have here in the United States, only they'll be paying only about half as much for those drugs. That's what you can do if you use the negotiating muscle of your national health insurance system to push down prices. The U.S. Medicare program is specifically prohibited by law from negotiating with drug companies to get prices lower. It's quite remarkable. It was part of the 2003 law that Congress passed. And as far as I know, no entity anywhere in the world is prohibited by law from negotiating when they go to purchase something to try to get a lower price. You can go out and try to negotiate a lower price at whenever you want. You may not get it, but you're never prohibited from doing it. And yet the U.S. Congress in 2003 decided to really put handcuffs on the Medicare program and tell them you cannot negotiate drug prices. Only private insurance companies can negotiate drug prices. And consequently, the prices in the United States are very, very high. Our group, Physicians for a National Health Program, has an entire proposal about how you control drug prices. The key to it is those tough negotiations with pharma. But there's some other aspects as well, like patent reform and enforcement of rules against deceptive marketing that are also needed to have a really excellent pharma system that is innovative, that provides us with new medications, but does so at an affordable price.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, one of the primary issues for nurses and their working conditions is that, in effect, they were on quota systems, or shall we say they were too overworked, too many patients to handle for the number of nurses that were staffing the various facilities. So in terms of the perception that the public has long had drilled into it, wait a minute, if you support a Medicare for all, a single-payer system, we're using the two interchangeably now, doesn't that mean further, wait a minute, more people coming into the system, thus affecting the working conditions, and also people having to wait on those proverbial lines and wait forever until they are appropriately assigned to a healthcare physician?
First of all, the money that we would save by not having one-third of every healthcare dollar go into the pockets of insurance companies and the decrease in pharmacology. I mean, think of a system. I mean, there's this moral question. I think everybody's aware of the EpiPen scandal, where this drug that saves people from dying from a peanut allergy or a bee sting or some acute situation went from, you know, cost pennies. They were being charged $600. These are children who have to have EpiPens for their allergies. Drug companies being able to charge that. Insulin, which went up 300%, another life-saving drug. People have died from not having enough insulin. That's the system that we currently have. Who can defend that? With single-payer system or a Medicare for All system, the savings would be extraordinary, and that money and people actually working to administer these insurance companies could then be trained to provide additional care in the workplace. We have shortage of caregivers because of the cost of health insurance and the cost that hospitals accommodate. Length of stay, people being discharged early before they're ready to go home because insurance companies won't pay beyond, they have a prescribed thing. You have 3 days for this, 2 days for that, overnight for this, go home for that. With a single-payer system, you wouldn't be stuck on these insurance-based reimbursements that hospitals feel they have to meet, so patients wouldn't suffer. And, of course, we'd be able to have enough staff to take care of patients. Primary care would be enhanced, and primary care is the key element in people staying healthy and out of emergency rooms. I work in an emergency room, and many of our patients are there because the primary health care system doesn't work for them. Their insurance doesn't cover certain tests. They wait months and months and months for the tests that they need. They have to try first and second and third tier treatments for care until they find out that belly pain they had was actually an abdominal tumor. But because of the way insurance companies reimburse, you have to go through a series of processes and waits in order to get a particular test, whether it's a CAT scan or an MRI or an ultrasound or a specialist to see you. Under a single-payer system, primary care would be much more attentive to people, and you would know your provider. Your provider would be able to know what you need, and that would be physicians or nurse practitioners who are also providers would be able to refer people for the appropriate testing at an appropriate time. Our emergency rooms wouldn't be jam-packed. Hopefully our inpatient stays would not be as intense because people would get the care that they need. So as nurses, we see the failures of the healthcare system every day in our practice.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks to Dr. Donald Moore, who is he's a primary care physician, and he's with the New York Metro Chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Plan on the Board of Directors, and Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, who's a registered nurse and is president of the New York State Nurses Association, which Ken and I certainly feel is perhaps the most progressive and important organized labor entity in the country, for sure, and Stephanie Woolhandler, who is a primary care physician and is also Secretary of the Physicians for a National Healthcare Plan. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.